Task 2. You will hear part of a program. Read through the notes below and complete them by filling in the gaps with the exact words you hear. Gap 0 is an example. Now read the notes.
As you fly into Pearson Airport in Toronto, you can see Canada's largest city take shape beneath you. Downtown, there is a dense core of tall, glassy buildings along the waterfront of Lake Ontario. Outside of that, short, single-family homes sprawl out in every direction. This is the view reporter Jay Coburn saw out his window as he moved to Canada in 2019.
In my head, I knew exactly where I wanted to live. A real big city apartment. Like the classic brownstone walk-ups you might see in New York, or the three-story stone apartment buildings with iron staircases you see in Montreal. I had this romantic notion of living in one of those early 20th century apartments. You know, great lighting, a little exposed brick, maybe even a nice fireplace. Is that really so much to ask for?
But at first, Jay struggled to find anything like that dream apartment in Toronto.
Instead, as a renter, I found myself looking at a lot of 400-square-foot condos, high up in some shiny and soulless towers, and some dank basement apartments under some rich person's house. All of these options were really expensive. I kept wondering, where are all the low-rise apartment buildings? The kinds of buildings you find in abundance in Montreal or New York or Chicago.
Jay was looking for a middle ground and not finding it. Something in between the extremes of single-family homes and big, generic condo towers. But there just weren't a lot of middle-sized rental buildings in Toronto.
Lots of cities are in the same boat as Toronto. Places like Los Angeles, Seattle, Boston, and Vancouver. All of these cities have a pronounced lack of mid-sized buildings. Right now, this is one of the big issues for urban planners. They even have a name for it. The missing middle.
The term missing middle can be confusing. It does not refer to middle-class housing. The missing middle is strictly about architectural scale. The middle, in this case, refers to a huge swath of housing options. Duplexes, triplexes, townhouses, courtyard buildings, and low-rise apartment buildings. Buildings of this size have an outsized effect on the city. Cities with these medium-density housing options have a lot of benefits.
For starters, they're less expensive to live in. Cities with lots of middle housing just have more choice in the housing market. The options are more diverse. They have more robust neighborhoods and options for families.
By contrast, cities without middle housing tend to be harder for pretty much everyone except for the wealthy, and they tend to be more segregated. So it's easy to see why there's some conflation between the missing middle and the lack of middle-income housing options. The two are absolutely related.
Toronto's missing middle is pretty extreme, and the main culprit for this is, I hope you're excited, early 20th century zoning laws.
In the late 1800s, there was a big wave of immigration to cities across North America. In Toronto, there was already an established population of British immigrants, but this new wave included a lot of Eastern European immigrants. New multi-unit tenement buildings cropped up to house these new people. But there was a backlash against these new immigrants, and in 1912, Toronto banned apartment buildings in most of the city.
This ban was an early version of exclusionary zoning, the kind of residential zoning where large swathes of urban centres are reserved for single-family homes, and only single-family homes. Cities across North America were passing these kinds of zoning laws, and they were driven by a false perception that apartment buildings were dens of iniquity.
They were often referred to as French flats. There was a kind of association of Frenchness with dubious morality.
This is Richard Dennis. He's Professor Emeritus at University College London, and he's kind of the historian of apartments in Toronto. Developers at the time were trying to associate their buildings with European class and luxury. Instead, they were met with unhinged accusations of immorality. This distaste for apartment buildings in the early 20th century was based on racist and sexist attitudes that were reflected in the media. The newspaper articles about apartments at this time are wild. I dug up a bunch, and there are lots of references to how apartments are unsanitary and poor for the morals of the city. There's this quote here from the Globe newspaper in 1912.
Quote, "Toronto must look to her building laws or she will be overrun with a plague of disease-breeding tenements and apartment houses," end quote.
At the time, Canada's elites were largely British. Toronto's puritanical WASPs were scared these apparently filthy apartments would be too tempting for nice British families.
And they also alluded to the idea of race suicide. And the fear was that if people went and lived in an apartment, well, they'd never become parents because they'd find that life was on the one hand so comfortable, but also spatially relatively constricted, they would never start a family. And that's where you would get this idea of race suicide. The birth rate would decline and British families would be overtaken by immigrant families.
To be clear, these articles don't reflect the reality of what apartments were like in Toronto. Early apartment buildings were actually aimed at the city's elite.
Now, listen again.
As you fly into Pearson Airport in Toronto, you can see Canada's largest city take shape beneath you. Downtown, there is a dense core of tall, glassy buildings along the waterfront of Lake Ontario. Outside of that, short, single-family homes sprawl out in every direction. This is the view reporter Jay Coburn saw out his window as he moved to Canada in 2019.
In my head, I knew exactly where I wanted to live. A real big city apartment. Like the classic brownstone walk-ups you might see in New York. Or the three-story stone apartment buildings with iron staircases you see in Montreal. I had this romantic notion of living in one of those early 20th century apartments. You know, great lighting, a little exposed brick. Maybe even a nice fireplace. Is that really so much to ask for?
But at first, Jay struggled to find anything like that dream apartment in Toronto.
Instead, as a renter, I found myself looking at a lot of 400-square-foot condos, high up in some shiny and soulless towers, and some dank basement apartments under some rich person's house. All of these options were really expensive. I kept wondering, where are all the low-rise apartment buildings? The kinds of buildings you find in abundance in Montreal or New York or Chicago.
Jay was looking for a middle ground and not finding it. Something in between the extremes of single-family homes and big, generic condo towers. But there just weren't a lot of middle-sized rental buildings in Toronto.
Lots of cities are in the same boat as Toronto. Places like Los Angeles, Seattle, Boston, and Vancouver. all of these cities have a pronounced lack of mid-sized buildings. Right now, this is one of the big issues for urban planners. They even have a name for it. The missing middle.
The term missing middle can be confusing. It does not refer to middle-class housing. The missing middle is strictly about architectural scale. The middle, in this case, refers to a huge swath of housing options. Duplexes, triplexes, townhouses, courtyard buildings, and low-rise apartment buildings. Buildings of this size have an outsized effect on the city. Cities with these medium-density housing options have a lot of benefits.
For starters, they're less expensive to live in. Cities with lots of middle housing just have more choice in the housing market. The options are more diverse. They have more robust neighborhoods and options for families.
By contrast, cities without middle housing tend to be harder for pretty much everyone except for the wealthy, and they tend to be more segregated. So it's easy to see why there's some conflation between the missing middle and the lack of middle-income housing options. The two are absolutely related.
Toronto's missing middle is pretty extreme, and the main culprit for this is, I hope you're excited, early 20th century zoning laws.
In the late 1800s, there was a big wave of immigration to cities across North America. In Toronto, there was already an established population of British immigrants, but this new wave included a lot of Eastern European immigrants. New multi-unit tenement buildings cropped up to house these new people. But there was a backlash against these new immigrants, and in 1912, Toronto banned apartment buildings in most of the city.
This ban was an early version of exclusionary zoning, the kind of residential zoning where large swathes of urban centers are reserved for single-family homes and only single-family homes. Cities across North America were passing these kinds of zoning laws, and they were driven by a false perception that apartment buildings were dens of iniquity.
They were often referred to as French flats. There was a kind of association of Frenchness with dubious morality.
This is Richard Dennis. He's Professor Emeritus at University College London, and he's kind of the historian of apartments in Toronto. Developers at the time were trying to associate their buildings with European class and luxury. Instead, they were met with unhinged accusations of immorality. This distaste for apartment buildings in the early 20th century was based on racist and sexist attitudes that were reflected in the media. The newspaper articles about apartments at this time are wild. I dug up a bunch, and there are lots of references to how apartments are unsanitary and poor for the morals of the city. There's this quote here from the Globe newspaper in 1912.
Quote, Toronto must look to her building laws or she will be overrun with a plague of disease-breeding tenements and apartment houses, end quote.
At the time, Canada's elites were largely British. Toronto's puritanical WASPs were scared these apparently filthy apartments would be too tempting for nice British families.
And they also alluded to the idea of race suicide. And the fear was that if people went and lived in an apartment, well, they'd never become parents because they'd find that life was on the one hand so comfortable, but also spatially relatively constricted, they would never start a family. And that's where you would get this idea of race suicide. The birth rate would decline and British families would be overtaken by immigrant families.
To be clear, these articles don't reflect the reality of what apartments were like in Toronto. Early apartment buildings were actually aimed at the city's elite.
This is the end of task 2.